Blog Talk Radio.
For me, turned 29 today. At what age are you supposed to start having your midlife crisis? What is that usually? It's usually like 40, right? Is it 40? I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud right now. But anywho, got a lot of stuff to get to today. Yesterday I actually took off for my birthday, but I ended up doing more work yesterday than I would have done if it was a normal work day. So it didn't work out like that. I had to do a bunch of interviews for Justice Democrats. So I don't feel as rested and zippy as I should for today, but nonetheless, I am ready to go, and you should buckle up because we got a lot of stuff to get to. A lot of stuff happened in the 3 days, I guess, since the last actual show. So let me give you a quick little run through. Of course, we have President Trump's executive orders, utter disaster, and the fallout of his executive orders. We have Obama speaking out against Trump, and so Fox Business decides to go after Obama. We have a horrific incident that happened in Quebec, and a lot of stuff. Let's jump right into it. I don't want to give you too many teasers here. So, without further ado, here we go. We're going to start with the biggest news of the weekend and the impact that it's having and what the actual purpose is. So, we discussed last week a new executive order that Donald Trump was working on at the time. He since actually signed this executive order. But the idea behind it was to ban people from certain countries from coming to the U.S. Well, now that it actually went into effect and he signed it, there's been a giant, giant backlash. So you had protests in many cities all across the country. And it's actually a very heartening thing to see because apparently he took one step too far and he bit off more than he could chew. And the American people said, hell no, this isn't going to happen. We're going to get out there. We're going to march all these different airports across the country. We're just swarmed with people. And they were demanding the release of these people who were unjustly detained as a result of this new executive order. So we went through it the other day, 7 countries where Trump said, we're not going to allow you in the country if you're from these countries. And we'll get to this later, but the countries that he picked, they make absolutely no sense. And the practical real-world effects of these countries being on the list has been sickening. So, for example, there were many toddlers who were detained for hours. I saw a little news clip on it the other day, a 5-year-old who was detained for hours. And, you know, the mother was crying, where's my son? What's going on here? There was a married couple in their 80s, one of them in a wheelchair, like 88 or 86 years old, and they're Iranian, and they were detained because, you know, according to President Trump's executive order, well, you can't come if you're from Iran or Sudan or Somalia or anything, or a bunch of places, Syria. So when the rubber meets the road and it's no longer theoretical and you're actually implementing these policies, you see the obvious problem with it, that you're doing this giant dragnet and this really generalized, vague idea of saying all people from that patch of dirt can't come in here. Well, hey, dipshit, even if you say, oh, I think it's about our security, what about all the women coming from these places, all the children coming from these places, all the senior citizens, all the young and middle-aged males who are not terrorists and have never in any way, shape, or form been involved in terrorism? I mean, this affects people I know. There are people who are here on a green card and are working and are productive citizens. And if they were to, you know, go to Canada for the weekend and try to come back in, they wouldn't be allowed back in. So this is just out of this world ridiculous. And people said, no, this isn't going to happen. We're going to get out there, we're going to protest. And it was spontaneous protest. It was a giant backlash, and it was a good thing. Now, there's been, you know, a kind of sort of debate about, well, is it a Muslim ban or is it not a Muslim ban? I don't know if it's a Muslim ban. Let's talk about this. Well, I'm going to get to Rudy Giuliani here, because Rudy Giuliani went on Fox News and he forgot to bullshit everybody during his segment. And he admitted something that he'd probably like to have back, because it flies in the face of the narrative that the White House and their apologists are trying to put out there. Let's watch.
And I want to ask you about this ban and the protest. Does the ban have anything to do with religion? How did the president decide the seven countries? I understand a permanent ban on the refugees.
Okay.
Talk to me.
I'll tell you the whole history of it. So
right.
When he first announced it, he said Muslim ban. He called me up. He said, put a commission together. Show me the right way to do it legally.
Whoopsie daisies. There it is. So Trump spoke to Rudy Giuliani, hey, I want to do a Muslim ban, how do I do it legally? Well, you obviously can't just say, we are doing a Muslim ban, because that would get slapped down in the courts in an instant, because it's obviously unconstitutional. So what do? Ooh, I don't know, maybe pick some of these countries that are predominantly Muslim and ban all people from coming to here from those places, but also slip into the executive order, oh, we're going to prioritize letting Christians in. So, oh, I wonder what you're trying to do. I wonder what you're trying to do here. So I find it hilarious that some people are like, no, it's not technically literally a Muslim ban. He didn't literally say the way you wrote it out that it's a Muslim ban. So, aha, I got you on a technicality. Don't I look like an idiot doing mental gymnastics? Yes, you do. So the countries where people are banned from coming from are Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Libya, Somalia. By the way, hilarious, we're bombing most of those countries, so we drop bombs on your head, in many instances ruin your life, and then if you try to flee from the carnage and the disaster and leave it all behind you and start fresh and run towards freedom, we say, eh, fuck off. By definition, if you are from these places, you are not even worthy of consideration. Now, I think it's 30 days to 90 days that they're going to do it for. They probably did that to test out the constitutionality of it, but there's another really crazy fact here, which is three separate federal courts in three different states said, yeah, you can't do that. You have to release these people that you're holding because you're holding them unjustly and illegally. And the Trump administration said, agree to disagree. And they instructed people to continue to hold these poor people at the airports, no matter even if they're 5 years old, even if they're senior citizens and all that stuff. So this is horrific. Now, again, I want to keep giving information on this because I think it's super important. When you talk about Syria and people we are accepting from Syria, did you know the overwhelming majority, I think it's over 80% of the people we accept from Syria as refugees, are women and children? Now, furthermore, Trump loves to use this line, like, oh, extreme vetting, we're going to do extreme vetting, which, by the way, sounds hilarious. It sounds like he's talking about the X Games or something, and it's like extreme snowboarding, extreme vetting. That's what we're going to do. It's going to be tremendous. Believe me, it'll be so extreme. Well, guess what? We already have extreme vetting. The way it works right now, you have to do biometric screening. There are like over a dozen different government agencies involved in doing a background check. It takes over a year on average to get in here. So we already have really rigorous vetting, the most rigorous vetting process in the world. So we already have that. But people on the far right are ignoring that we have that. And they're saying, I don't care, more, let's do more. Let's do more. Let's ban people from these places.
And on top of all of that, again, you have in Iran, for example, who's on the banned list. Iran, they're a Shia nation. Now, obviously, they're not perfect, and they have terrible, terrible issues, and they're a theocracy, and we should oppose that, and I hope they have a secular, liberal revolution and move in the right direction, so on and so forth. But those are not the goddamn terrorists. In fact, how many fatal terrorist attacks have been committed from people from all seven different countries that are on this banned list in the last 40 years in the U.S.? Zero. Isn't that a stunning fact? They're banning them because terrorism. We've got to be terrorism. There's going to be terrorism, so we got to ban these people. Oh, they did zero attacks in the last 40 years? What? And again, I don't think Trump's idiot parade knows that Shia Islam is different from Sunni Islam, and they don't know that Wahhabi or Salafi Islam is the ultra-conservative extremist version of Islam, which is the ideology that ISIS is birthed out of, and Al-Qaeda. Like, they just think Muslim, I don't know. So the people in Iran who are fighting ISIS, they're guilty enough, and they are ISIS. The poor carpenter with his family who's trying to flee ISIS in Syria, they're equal to ISIS, because, I don't know, you share a religion close enough. Well, then don't get mad when we fucking call you a bigot, because that's what you are. If that's the way you think, hey, close enough. There's 1.6 billion Muslims on the planet. From these seven countries, I'm going to ban the Muslims, effectively. And that's close enough to ISIS and Al-Qaeda for me. So that's it. That's the end of the conversation. Well, then you are doing generalized thinking. You are doing vague thinking. You are doing broad thinking. You are treating them as a monolith. And that is, of course, a bigoted position. But they clutch their pearls when you say that. Oh, how dare you call me a bigot when I just enacted bigoted policies? What do you mean? So I'm sick of the fucking tap dance and the just admit what you are, man. Just admit it. Now, people also like to bring up the whataboutery point. But what about Obama? This show has ripped Obama endlessly. One of the main things I ripped him for was, hey, look, he's doing drone strikes on people he shouldn't be doing drone strikes on. We're doing seven interventions right now. He's killing massive numbers of innocent people. Obama put these countries on a list, and the list said, hey, people coming from here, you have to do extra vetting because these are countries of concern. But now people are trying to do a full false equivalence and say, well, that's then that he did equal to Trump. That is not equal to Trump. Trump's saying, I'm going to not allow them in from those countries at all. All of them are guilty enough. Extra vetting is one thing. Saying all of them are guilty is a totally different thing. But on top of that, I ranted against Obama endlessly, and many people in my audience are consistent on this point too. We railed against the drone strikes, so we were outraged by that, and we fought that, and we're also going to fight this. When people try to make this counterintuitive point of like, it's all equal between all the presidents, so shh. Well, why the fuck would I not criticize Trump when he's also doing shitty policies? Can we focus on the issue at hand, which is this is a horrible idea, likely unconstitutional, illegal according to the courts, and we should roll it in, we should roll it back and go in a different direction? So I'm quite annoyed by the disingenuous arguments being used in this discussion. I'm quite annoyed by apologists on this. We can't have a policy like this. So many innocent people are being affected. And what drives me crazy is this: the people on the right love to criticize people on the left for doing identity politics. Oh yes, you're pitting whites against blacks, and you're identifying solely with a group and the collective over the individual, and we're against that. But then when Trump says, "I am going to ban all Iranians," full stop. I'm going to ban all people from Libya or Syria, full stop. They go, what do you mean? That's a good idea. I don't know what you're talking about. It's just to protect the country. So you're going to get mad at the left for collectivism and identity politics, but you're going to practice the same kind of collectivism and identity politics. When you say, yeah, if you're from Iran, that's close enough to being a terrorist. You're Muslim. Good enough. So you are a monolith, and you are guilty enough for the actions of extremists. So I'm just going to group you all together and say, it is what it is. Well, that's irrational by its nature. You go on a case-by-case basis, and that's not what they're doing here. They're doing the opposite of that, and I support the protests and the movements against it because this shouldn't be what America stands for. Okay.
right, next.
So Donald Trump banned people coming to the U.S. from Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Libya, and Somalia. But many commenters have pointed out the utter arbitrary nature of picking those countries, quite apart from its stupidity, which we just covered in detail. Because if the concern is what they say it is, and they claim, oh, terrorism, that's what it is, it's terrorism. Well, there's been zero fatal terror attacks in the last 40 years from people from those seven countries. So in the words of somebody we know, wrong, wrong. Now, furthermore, if that is your concern, now I'm not advocating this idea because it's not a good idea either way, because you're still doing broad, generalized, bigoted, vague thinking and treating people as a monolith. But if that was your concern, why is the UAE, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia left off the list? So the New York Times explains here, these countries, unlike those subject to the ban, are ones where Donald Trump has done business. In Saudi Arabia, his most recent government financial disclosure revealed several limited liability Trump corporations. In Egypt, he had two Trump companies registered. In the United Arab Emirates, he had licensed his name to a Dubai golf resort and a luxury residential development and spa. Some of these entities have since been closed, and others remain active. A look at other nations with large Muslim populations only reinforces this troubling pattern. Turkey, India, and the Philippines could all pose similar risks as the banned countries of origin that concern the president. Yet Trump has done business in all three places. They, too, are omitted from his list. Shocker. So the guy who put, oh, yeah, I'm protecting everybody. That's what I'm doing. That's what it's all about here, man, protecting from terrorism. Daddy Trump's going to save you. Law and order candidate. The countries that where it's most likely that you're going to have an attack from somebody from there, off the list. Saudi Arabia, 15 of the 19 hijackers on 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the home of Wahhabi Islam, the most ultra-conservative, fundamentalist, right-wing version of Islam. They are ISIS that made it. And Trump's like, oh, them? No, they have money. It's all about that petrodollar, bitch. They have money. They have oil. We have business relations with them. And furthermore, like they're pointing out here, but I happen to know more detail on that, Trump registered seven new businesses in Saudi Arabia since he started campaigning for president. Seven. So if you're rich and you're Muslim, well, I don't care about your ideology, even if it is toxic and even if it is bigoted. I don't care about your ideology. It's all good because we're business partners. So, you know, we're open to you. We will pick on the relatively poorer Muslim countries where most of them we've been bombing. And still they've done zero terror attacks in the last 40 years, people from those countries in the United States. So this is, it's an arbitrary list. And by the way, again, I want to be clear. I'm not advocating, oh, you should ban people from Saudi Arabia from coming here, because that would be bigoted too. Yes, the government has a toxic ideology. Yes, they're the most right-wing, ultra-conservative country that there is. But that doesn't mean that everybody in Saudi Arabia is guilty of that. Clearly, you have plenty of people there who are secular people, who are liberal people, who are liberal Muslims, who many of them would escape persecution. I mean, you know how they treat people there. Oh, you did drug smuggling. We're going to behead you in the public square. Oh, you're a woman and you don't want to cover your face and you want to drive. You want to be treated equally. How dare you, bitch? Fall in line. Well, what if we need to give refugee protection to some people from there? But no. But no. Well, actually, in the case of Saudi Arabia, maybe he would take them. But if that happens to be the case and you're getting bombs dropped on you in Yemen, if ISIS is killing your family in Syria, if you're in Iran and you're being persecuted for religious reasons, nope, then you can't come here. So it's a horrible idea. Look, you have to vet individually and on a case-by-case basis. And we already have a great vetting process in the U.S. Biometric screening, multiple different government organizations are involved. They go through various records. They do all these different kinds of tests. It takes over a year on average to get in here. So do it on a case-by-case basis because that's the rational thing to do. And obviously you open it up to everybody because I mean, what are you going to do? People from the most war-torn region right now in Syria, the people who need the help the most are the ones you're going to say, I'm not even going to consider you? Well, that's a monstrous idea, and that's a terrible idea, and history will not judge that kindly, and they're right to not judge it kindly. Okay. All right, now we go to even more detailed foreign policy. We now know the facts on President Trump's first military mission as president. Vice News explains that 14 al-Qaeda operatives were killed. So this is where some people go, oh, success, wonderful. This is the best news we could possibly have. But, quote, he hailed his first counterterror operation since becoming president a success, though it clearly did not run to script, resulting in the death of a U.S. commando, injuries to six other soldiers, and the deaths of at least 10 women and children. Among the dead include an 8-year-old girl. They continue here. Human rights groups warn that the raid, the first for the U.S. with troops on the ground since 2014, could help bolster local sympathies for al-Qaeda in the war-torn country, regarded as one of the terror group's most dangerous branches. Okay. This is horrific, and this is, unfortunately, a continuation, in many respects, of Obama's failures on this front. So under President Obama, they took out Anwar al-Awlaki with a drone. Now, Anwar al-Awlaki was a jihadist, but he was also an American citizen, which gives him due process rights. Now, they didn't give him any due process rights. They didn't even try him without him there, which they could have done. They just vaporized him with a drone. So the ACLU sued the Obama administration over this and said, you can't do this. Do you see the precedent that you're setting, that the U.S. president could just drone American citizens? That's nuts. So after that, they didn't stop there, of course. They took out Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki. Now, that's the 16-year-old son of Anwar al-Awlaki. Now, Abdul Rahman, no, he was not a jihadist. There was no indication of that, no evidence of that. He's a 16-year-old kid. So they took him out with a drone, and they claimed, oh, no, that was an accident. It was collateral damage because we were going after somebody else who we successfully got. Well, come to find out, actually recently, we didn't get the guy they claimed that they got. We only got Abdul Rahman. So they took out the son of Anwar al-Awlaki. And then when the Obama administration at the time was asked, hey, why did you do that? You can't do that. This is wildly unconstitutional and illegal. Robert Gibbs famously said, he should have had a better father. Or he should have had a more responsible father. Oh, so that's what we're going to do now? You know, you're guilty for the crimes of your father? The fuck is this? That's some Orwellian garbage that he's spewing. So on top of that, you have the Obama administration. How was their overall record with drones? Because you might say, oh, Kyle, it's an anomaly. Outside of assassinating American citizens with drones, everything else was hunky-dory. No, you had 90% of the time they got the wrong people with drones. They didn't hit the intended target 90% of the time. And we've covered the stories. Oh, you hit a wedding procession. You hit a funeral. All innocent people being slaughtered. So I wonder if that's going to radicalize people further, and I wonder if that makes us the terrorist in this instance. I mean, we've spoken about people who worked in the drone program, and they say, you should have heard the conversation as that went on, where people would say, oh, I just killed a fun-sized terrorist. So they say, oh, I killed a little kid. But it's okay, he was going to be a terrorist eventually anyway. Who cares? Oh, my goodness. So that was under Obama. Now under Trump, what are they doing? In this case, it was a direct mission on the ground. And again, you had the deaths of at least 10 women and children, including an 8-year-old girl. By the way, guess who that 8-year-old girl was? The sister of Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki. So they just took out the whole family. Hey, the father, guilty enough. Hey, now the son, just as guilty, who cares? The 8-year-old girl, the sister of Abdul Rahman, now dead too. And they point out in the article, this is going to increase sympathies now for al-Qaeda. This is not the way to go about it. This is not the way to win this war. This is not the way to win hearts and minds. It should be obvious, but it's not, because the mindset in Washington, under Obama, but definitely under Trump, oh, we're the good guys by default. By definition, we're the good guys. So when we do wrong, when we do bad, close enough, good enough. Well, no, you are what you do. And if you're a military that repeatedly takes out U.S. citizens, if you're a military that repeatedly takes out civilians, and you don't really care about the consequences of that, you're a war criminal. So let's actually try to abide by international law and abide by the U.S. Constitution and have a foreign policy that we would expect from any other nation. But I know that's too much to ask in the United States in the current day, because we're all oblivious and blind to what our government does. There's a reason why, according to a Gallup poll recently, within the last few years, they poll people all around the world, who's the biggest threat to world peace? The answer was not Russia. The answer was not Iran. The answer was the United States of America. Unless you say, oh, that's because everybody else is stupid and dumb and idiotic. Remind me who has the most interventions going on in the world right now? Right, we have 7 of them going on right now. 2 full-scale wars, mind you. Remind me who did the worst crime from the year 2000 and on? Oh, right, the Iraq War. An illegal war waged against a country that didn't attack us, that killed minimum hundreds of thousands of civilians and occupied a country. Remind me who has 800 military bases all over the world at a cost of $100 billion a year. Remind me who spends over 50% of their discretionary spending on the military. Remind me who spends more than the next 8 biggest countries combined on their military. I think you all know the answer to that. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump signed a horrendous new executive order. We'll get to that. And just how unpopular is President Trump already? Yummy, yummy, yummy. Stay right there. We'll discuss that and much more.
So there ain't no complications later on for us, no. But I know things don't stay the same. People grow and seasons change, but when it comes to love, don't you feel like you ever gotta worry about mine? Feeling shady for you all the time, 'cause when I say just don't stick around. I'll build you up and let you down, but I'm not one of those. No, no. I understand that you've been burned. When you need me.
the left. You will face a wombo drop you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. The left. You will face a wombo drop you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left.
Son of a bitch, we're back, everybody.
Thank you, Lilith, for wishing me a happy birthday. And thank you to the chat for doing the same. Appreciate it, guys. All right, Donald Trump and his horrendous new executive order. Not just the grotesque one on basically the Muslim ban. Now we have another one on the economy. And these aren't going to stop. Can't stop. Won't stop. Donald Trump signed a horrendous new executive order. It requires that, quote, for every one new regulation issued, at least two prior regulations be identified for elimination. Twitter lit into him for this because that is the logic of a child.
For every one new one, we're going to eliminate two. Tremendous. Believe me.
Okay, hey, jackass, get out of the world of theory and philosophy for a second and understand that the regulations on the books usually have a reason for them. Now, I'm not saying there isn't unnecessary red tape that happens from time to time. Of course that exists, and I'd be in favor of eliminating that like any reasonable person would. But to pull arbitrary numbers out of your rectum...
Yeah, for every one, we're going to eliminate two. And that's what we're going to do. I know. An in-depth analysis from Columbia University found that when we add a new regulation, we could eliminate two, and everything will still be tremendous, believe me.
Oh, man, that's so dumb. Now, understand, this was a campaign talking point that he did when he was running for office. He says, every new one, we're going to eliminate two. And the crowd's like, deregulate everything. Chemicals in the water is wonderful. Well, now he's actually doing it. So credit on this one. This is a rare time I'm going to give Trump credit for consistency, because usually he's contradicting himself on virtually every issue. Here's one where he was like, no, I said it. I'm going to do it. For every new one, we eliminate two. That's what we're going to do. Now, furthermore, what's the ultimate goal of this? Well, don't take my word for it. Take it from Donald Trump last week when he spoke about this.
We think we can cut regulations by 75%, maybe more, but by 75%.
75%. We can cut regulations by 75%. Really, Don? Please, name me those regulations. Like, they're such ideologues. There are regulations on the books that, you know, prevent against air pollution, prevent against water pollution, like the Clean Air and Clean Water Act. There are regulations that don't allow businesses to dispose of things in a way that would threaten communities. There are regulations and guidelines on how you can do fracking. That's an area where we need even more regulations. But there are reasons behind these things. I mean, there are economic rules that are regulations. You know, hey, Wall Street can't leverage to this amount because that would threaten the stability of the economy. Like, you have to understand that a practical problem would arise, and then you'd have the government go, okay, well, we need to do something about this. What should we do? Well, the best course of action is to have a regulation that says X, Y, and Z. Building codes are regulations. Hey, if there's a hurricane that hits, you know, southern Florida, you need to make sure that the buildings are built in a certain way so that it could withstand a storm surge of X number of feet, and it could withstand winds of up to however many miles per hour. There are people who worked really hard to fix real problems, real issues, and have regulations that save lives. And these clowns come along drunk on Ayn Rand Kool-Aid.
They're like, yeah, no, you just eliminate them. That's 75%.
75%? Look,
I'm a reasonable dude. Perhaps I'm far too kind and reasonable to the right-wingers here. If he came out and said 10%, I wouldn't be doing this segment. If he came out and said 20%, which, by the way, 20% is really, really large. And let's just cut regulations 20%. That's what we'll do. But I still wouldn't do this segment. This motherfucker said 75%. We're gonna cut 75%, maybe more. Maybe more. Maybe we cut 92.6% of the regulations. It would be tremendous, believe me. Well, that's just a horrible idea. And this is, again, ideology overriding empirical reality and the consequences of going down this road. This is the same thing as Trump did his federal government hiring freeze. And then the VA reaches out to him and goes, no, you can't do that. First of all, we prioritize hiring veterans. So you're stopping us from hiring veterans who are one of your key constituencies who you said you're going to look out for. Now you're taking away their jobs. But furthermore, we're understaffed. We're chronically understaffed. We need to hire more people. Trump and his administration were like, no, wrong. We're going to hiring freeze everywhere in the federal government. Hiring freeze, tremendous, believe me. Well, again, you're letting your ideology override the empirical reality and the effects of what would actually happen in the real world when you implement your philosophy. So it's a sad, sad thing to watch. And now we have a lunatic pulling numbers out of his ass.
For every one new regulation, we eliminate two. And overall, we're going to eliminate 75%, maybe more, of the regulations.
Huh. Then get ready for the wild, wild west and a system that's very similar to anarcho-capitalism. And remember, in U.S. history, the times where we've been closer to that kind of a system, what happened? Giant economic crashes. Boom-bust cycles. So the Great Depression, for example, deregulated massively, cut taxes on the rich. You had the economy take off, the roaring 20s, it's going to be great forever, and then, oh shit, it all came crashing down and we're in the Great Depression. The Great Recession, again, what happened? You had neoliberal policies under Clinton, and then you had even further deregulatory policies and trickle-down economics implemented under Bush. More tax cuts for the rich, more deregulation, and oh shit, the economy was a house of cards and it crashed. So we're going to see the same thing again here. What do you think? The same thing's not going to happen? Of course it's going to happen. You deregulate, you cut taxes for the rich, you're going to have another boom. Oh, everything's great. It's going to be great forever. Oh, shit, there's another crash. So hear me now, quote me later. It's happening, and he's totally unaware of it because he's not that bright, and he's pushing ridiculous policies like cutting 75% or more of regulation. Okay. Bloom, 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 bloom. All right, now, here we go. Gallup is out with some incredible new numbers about Trump's presidency. Listen to this. The number of days until achieving majority disapproval. For Ronald Reagan, it was 727 days. That's amazing. That's a really, really long time. But listen to this. For the first George Bush, 1,336 days, even longer. Clinton, it took 573 days. Still a really long time, but shorter than the rest. For George W. Bush, this is amazing. It took 1,205 days before people said, a majority of people said, yeah, I disapprove. I dislike him and what he's doing. For President Obama, it was 936 days. You ready for this? How long did it take Donald Trump to reach majority disapproval? 8 days. Oh, you have to be kidding me. Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Even George W. Bush, it took 1,205 days. Look, it took Bill Clinton, was the shortest one of the recent presidents, 573. Trump hit it in 8 days. That is unbelievable. And look, this goes back to something we've spoken about a million times, but it is true that at one point during the general election, Trump was the most disliked general election candidate of all time. He had a disapproval rating of 63% at one point. Now, Hillary Clinton losing to him really is a sign of how disastrous the corporate Democrats are and how they don't know what they're doing and they can't beat the easiest people to beat. So, by the way, JusticeDemocrats.com, check us out and sign up. Join us. Help us defeat the corporate Democrats. But so Hillary Clinton was horrendous, and she knew the rules. She knew it's not a popular vote, and she knew the state she had to hold, and she didn't. So that doesn't take away from Trump's win. But here's what it does mean. Don't come to me talking about a goddamn mandate. You don't have a goddamn mandate by any stretch of the imagination. You have the opposite of a mandate. When you lose the popular vote by nearly 3 million people, when you hit majority disapproval 8 days into your presidency, it's not your ideas that are popular. It's that the other person, when you go by the Electoral College system, was more unpopular than you were. You were still unpopular. She was more unpopular in the Electoral College system and the way that functions. So, no, you don't have a mandate to cut 75% or more regulations. No, you don't have a mandate to ban Muslims from the seven countries, majority Muslim countries. We're going to ban people from coming in from there. No, you don't have a mandate for torture and your backwards, grotesque ideology. So you have to go by the individual polling numbers. And we've described it 1,000 times, but Bernie Sanders' philosophy is the most popular. 55% of people want a single-payer healthcare system. I think it's 58% want universal education. A majority want to raise taxes on the rich. So the list goes on and on. 80%, according to a different poll, want the minimum wage increased. Only 17% still want to be entangled in all these foreign wars. So the only thing you have a mandate to do are the individual issues where the American people say, I would like you to do that. But all this garbage and this far-right nonsense that you're in favor of, people are not in favor of. And since you've taken office, what have you done? You've pushed nothing but establishment candidates and far-right candidates. Jeff Sessions for Attorney General? Good people don't smoke marijuana, Jeff Sessions? You want that guy? You want Goldman Sachs as Treasury Secretary with Steve Mnuchin? You want Poozner, the fast food CEO, who doesn't believe in labor because he wants to move towards automation? You want that guy to be the Secretary of Labor, an Ayn Rand devotee, doesn't even believe in the minimum wage, doesn't believe in break time? He got sued over not giving his people enough break time? You want that guy in charge? Hell no. Hell no. Betsy DeVos, a Christian fundamentalist who doesn't believe in public schools, to be the head of the public schools? Hell no. So this is why it took 8 days to get to majority disapproval. 8 days. So sit down, son. You don't have no fucking mandate. Okay. Now, let's go to Fox News and Neil Cavuto and what's angering them today? This is amazing. Fox host Neil Cavuto decided to go after Obama over an egregious wrong that he committed. Let's watch.
Barack Obama has issued a statement saying American values are at stake with this latest move. The president's office, President Barack Obama's office, releasing a statement supporting the protests going on around the country, speaking out against discriminating individuals based on faith, and saying, Kevin Lewis, a spokesman for the former president, that he's heartened by the level of engagement taking place in communities around the country. 10 days to do that. We should say that in the case of Bill Clinton questioning George Bush, it took 18 months. For Ford questioning something Jimmy Carter did, it took 3 months. For Jimmy Carter questioning something his successor Ronald Reagan did, 7 months for his first critical comments. This is a record. More after this.
Who cares? File that under don't give a shit. No, in fact, file that under good. I'm happy. Look at the shit they talk about. Whoa, clutch my pearls. A Democratic president disagrees with a Republican president. Whoa. This is how utterly vacuous and vapid and substanceless the mainstream media is, and specifically Fox News and Fox Business are. Because this is they got to fill the dead air, so what are you going to talk about? Policy details. No, you clutch your pearls over stupid surface-level garbage, window-dressing nonsense. It took him such a short amount of time to criticize Trump. Oh, are you going to be okay, snowflake? By the way, I love the irony of all this. You have Donald Trump, who does something that's profoundly anti-civil liberties and against human rights. This idea that we're just going to say, hey, if you're from these seven countries, we're not going to allow you in. And you have Rudy Giuliani saying, yeah, it is a Muslim ban. He asked me how he could do a Muslim ban legally. So you have somebody who doesn't believe in freedom of religion and says, yeah, if you believe in that close enough to ISIS, I'm just going to kick you out. So you have people standing up for civil liberties and for common sense and for justice. And people on the right are accusing them of being snowflakes. Snowflakes? You motherfuckers have 88-year-old Iranian senior citizens sitting in an airport for 12 hours because you're scared that they might come in here and do an attack. Who's the snowflake again? There was a 5-year-old held for hours while the mother cried at an airport. Who's the snowflake? We got to keep out the 5-year-old. I'm so scared! Keep out the 5-year-old and keep out the 88-year-old. I can't take it. Oh, then maybe we'll do a terrorist attack. Their skin is a little darker than mine. I'm so scared. You're the fucking snowflakes. Get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. You're snowflakes. Notice the people who scream the most about, are you triggered, are usually the ones who are most triggered, who need a safe space the most. So spare me this idea of like, oh, right-wing truth teller. You're not a truth teller. You're an idiot. It's not, you know, regressive to say, hey, maybe we shouldn't ban all people from these seven different countries. It's called intelligence. It's called, oh, look, a businessman from Iran who's a secular liberal is not equal to a fundamentalist who despises the United States of America. A child is not equal to that. The overwhelming majority of females are not equal to that. The senior citizens are not equal to that. By the way, you could even dislike the United States of America, but you have a family member here, and you want to visit that family member, and you might not like America, but guess what? That doesn't mean you're going to do an attack against America. You know what that's called? Freedom of thought, bitch! Unless the people on the right want to start enforcing thought crimes too, which they do! They do, and they don't believe in freedom of religion! So I'm tired of the fucking hypocrisy and the idea, oh, you got all in your feels, you left-wing person who cares about people and humanity. Ooh, fuck off. You're the ones who are clutching your pearls. And look at the shit you're talking about. And by the way, this aspect, the Neil Cavuto aspect, this is not a partisan issue. So you're talking about, it took them such a short amount of time to go after President Trump. Boo! If you want to attack Obama, why not attack Obama over the shit he did that's actually wrong? Like bombing those seven countries, or most of those seven countries, which Trump now banned people from coming to the U.S. from. There's a real issue to attack Obama over. Or how about the fact that 90% of the time it hit the wrong target, the drone strikes under Obama. 90% of the time, you have drone operators who said, yeah, we went after kids because they were fun-sized terrorists. Guilty enough. They had bad fathers, so I don't give a fuck. I'm going to destroy them. You had people, there was a culture for the drone strikes where people said, yeah, no, we did cocaine, and we were drinking beers. And that's what it was. And yes, we just press a button and we obliterate shit. And then we laugh about it. So you want to go after Obama, go after him for that. Go after him for assassinating a 16-year-old American citizen with a drone. Go after him for repeatedly going after American citizens and having no due process and violating the Constitution. There are countless real things to go after Obama for, but you've got nothing to say about that because you actually like it. You actually like it. So Trump just took out an 8-year-old girl the other day with ground forces and killed 10 women and children in a raid that was supposed to be against Al-Qaeda. Does Neil Cavuto have criticism of that? Does he have criticism against Obama for violating international law and the Constitution? What's he saving his sharp criticism for and clutching his pearls? Oh, you criticize Trump so fast on a move that's obviously preposterous and idiotic. The media is broken in this country. They're not discussing information. They're not discussing data. They're not discussing things that affect your life directly. How many segments have there been on Fox News of the fact that 50% of people in America make $30,000 a year or less. How much discussion has there been about the fact that 8 people in the world have more wealth than the bottom 3.6 billion? Think of that as a pizza pie. You open up the pie, 8 people take half the pie, the remaining 50% of the pie, 3.6 billion people. You think income inequality is a problem? You think the system's rigged? You think maybe we should do something to address that? No, that might affect the holy marketplace, which you must leave unregulated and worship at the altar of Goldman Sachs. All hail Goldman. If you can't tell, I'm sick of this, and I despise this. I despise the fact that we don't have a serious dialogue in this country. But thankfully, the American people are getting it. Now there's a backlash to the draconian policies. Turns out the American people said, no, we're actually not going to let you ban people from these 7 different countries because you're quite literally categorizing all people from these 7 different countries as a monolith. So we're not going to do that. We're not going to let you do that. We're going to say you need to vet them individually, which we already have a fantastic, superb, rigorous vetting system here. Support these protests because they're very important. We should have had these under Obama, too, when he was assassinating innocent people with drones and when he was bombing 7 different countries and when he expanded NSA spying. Believe me, I wanted to see these protests then, too. We didn't get them. We got them now, though. And instead of focusing on the important issues and saying, yeah, what Trump is doing is wrong, instead of doing that, on Fox News and many other outlets, they're not taking it seriously. And on Fox News, the thing they decide to focus on is, how dare President Obama express tepid support for a movement that is obviously standing up for the right side of history and doing the right thing for innocent people? Okay. Let's see. We should take a quick break. And when we come back, here's what I have for you. There's a horrific incident that happened in Canada over the weekend. And what happened when an anti-abortion group decided to try to make a march? Wait until you see this one, man. This one is crazy. All right, stay right there. We'll be right back.
Walk.
from the left, Renega left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back.
Alright.
Alright, got a lot more to get to here, so let's do it. What are we waiting for? Nothing. That's the answer. Okay. There was a horrific incident that happened over the weekend in Canada, the Intercept explains here. A mass shooting at a Quebec City mosque last night. They're saying last night here, but it was over the weekend. The article's a few days old. Left 6 people dead and 8 wounded. The targeted mosque, the Cultural Islamic Center of Quebec, was the same one at which a severed pig's head was left during Ramadan last June. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau called the episode a terrorist attack on Muslims. Now, at first, the media blamed a Moroccan Muslim for the attack, but the suspect is neither Moroccan nor Muslim. The Moroccan individual, Mohammed Belkadir, was actually one of the worshippers at the mosque and called 9/11 to summon the police and played no role whatsoever in the shooting. The actual shooting suspect is 27-year-old Alexander Bissonnette, a white French-Canadian who is, by all appearances, a rabid anti-immigrant nationalist. Okay, so here you have a really important instance of fake news. And you have an important instance of a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth can put its pants on. So right-wing Twitter pounced as soon as this incident happened, and they said, oh, it's a Muslim. Sean Spicer even said,
well, now you see exactly why it is that President Trump has to do what he's doing and to protect our nation,
referring, of course, to his de facto Muslim ban, banning people from 7 predominantly Muslim countries. And again, people need to understand, it's not me saying Muslim ban, it was Rudy Giuliani, who said, Trump called me and said, how do I do a Muslim ban legally? So how do I do a Muslim ban without saying it's a Muslim ban? So you had people pounce and you had people attack. And it's wild to see people immediately go, oh, it's Muslims. And then when they find out, oh, it's not Muslims, all of a sudden those same people, they turn and they go, well, let's not politicize this. What? You're just saying, oh, Muslim. Let's do anti-Muslim policies across the board here and, restrict immigration and tie this to the more broader Muslim community in the West. And then when you found out it wasn't, well, the lone wolf. The double standards are taxing, let's say. So the reality of the situation is Muslim fundamentalism a problem? Of course it is. Anybody can see that. Anybody can admit that and acknowledge that. That doesn't mean you craft policies that crack down on a broad swath of Muslims or Muslims in general, like we're seeing with President Trump and his let's ban people from 7 different Muslim-majority countries, which, by the way, how many attacks have come against the United States from people from those places? 0 fatal terror attacks in the last 40 years from those places. So this is demagoguery that we're seeing. And we've discussed it before, but the reality is, especially in the United States, this is Canada, so it's different. But in the United States, we have 30,000 gun deaths every year, over 30,000. We have, and over 10,000 of them are homicides. So you are much, much more likely to die in run-of-the-mill gun violence than you are by some sort of terror attack from a refugee. In fact, it was the Cato Institute, a conservative think tank, that crunched the numbers, and they found that the likelihood of dying in a terror attack by perpetrated by a Muslim refugee is either 1 in 3.6 million or it was 1 in 3.6 billion. I don't remember the exact number. You guys have to look it up. Obviously, there's a big difference between million and billion. But as I'm saying this, you could pull it up on Google if you happen to be watching it on YouTube or whatever. They did a study on it, and they actually crunched the numbers and went through it. So, look, again, this doesn't mean that Muslim fundamentalism isn't a problem. Of course it is. This doesn't mean that ISIS isn't a scourge. Of course it is. What it means is
Don't use it to pounce on the narrative that you want to pounce on and then get caught, you know, with your fucking pants down and go, oh, shit. Again, the hilarious thing is there were many people who were saying, oh, yeah, now the left won't acknowledge this because it doesn't fit the narrative. Right, because every time there's a terror attack perpetrated by a Muslim, the left doesn't cover it. We've covered countless terror attacks by Muslims. Of course we have. It happens in reality, so we cover it as fucking news. So in that shot, just me, it's everybody on the left. But they say, oh, it's not going to fit their narrative, so they won't talk about it. But then when, ironically, when this didn't fit the right-wing narrative, they go, oh, let's not talk about it. So, by the way, I know, my hair is beyond fucked up. If you just saw the back there, what am I going to do? I don't give a fuck. Get over it. but, yeah, it's gross to see the immediate, like, pounce if it fits my narrative and ignore if it doesn't fit my narrative. We should all discuss all these different incidents and discuss the rational policy responses to it. And I would hope that everybody agrees that in all cases, it doesn't mean you immediately go to take away civil liberties and rights and you immediately go to crack down on a broader community. And that goes for everybody. Not that anybody's ever proposed this, but just so everybody knows, in the United States, over 60% of mass shootings are done by white males. I would hope that if somebody in a parallel universe came out with a policy to crack down on white males and take away the civil liberties and the rights of white males, that everybody would say, no, just because they do most mass shootings doesn't mean that all of them should be subject to extra scrutiny, because that is generalized thinking. It's thinking of white males as a monolith. It's saying I'm guilty enough for Dylan Roof's crime that I deserve extra scrutiny, but I don't. And by the same token, random Muslims coming from Iran or elsewhere that are on the ban list, they don't deserve, you know, this extra kind of scrutiny, when oftentimes, in many cases, Muslims are the majority victims of terrorism in many of these countries. And again, that's not to downplay the scourge of Muslim fundamentalism, and it's also not to downplay the scourge of white nationalism and extremism and far-right terrorism by bringing up the white males point. It's just say, let's keep everything in perspective and let's be rational about this, and let's not jump to conclusions and harp away only when it's the narrative that we like and that fits our perception. Okay. Looks like we're going to finish a wee bit early today, ladies and gentlemen, but that's okay because it's my birthday. It's my birthday. I have a hilarious story for you guys from the Huffington Post on the issue of abortion. They explain here, the organizers of a February 11th anti-abortion rally have faced an unexpected snag. The planned demonstration and more than 130 Planned Parenthood health centers across the country has attracted many would-be protesters who thought the event's website said defend Planned Parenthood instead of defund Planned Parenthood. Quote, we got slammed with emails from pro-choice people wanting to come out and support Planned Parenthood, said Eric Scheidler, spokesperson for the Pro-Life Action League and organizer of the rally. Okay, that's awesome. So they're going, yeah, that's what we're going to do, big rally against Planned Parenthood because Planned Parenthood's so terrible. And then people call up, they're like, I would love to march with you in support of Planned Parenthood. And they're like, wait, what? They're like, yeah, isn't that what you're doing? No, we want to defund Planned Parenthood, not defend Planned Parenthood. Like, oh, fuck off, click. So, it's amazing. Like, why do you think that's a popular position? These are like, oh, we're going to march for this thing that nobody agrees with. Like, even people who are, there are conservatives who say, yeah, Planned Parenthood is a good idea. Why? Because it's not just, everybody thinks like, oh, just abortion. It's not fucking just abortion. Abortion is 3% of what they do. And by the way, when it is that 3%, there's no government funds going to it. They have to pay out of pocket for it. So 97% of it is family planning. It's normal health clinic stuff. It's cancer screenings for women. So what are you doing? They don't know this. They don't care. But when they try to do a rally in support of the idea of, yeah, let's be against it, everybody goes, no. And for the record here, what percentage of people in the U.S. agree with the organizers of this defund Planned Parenthood protest that you know, abortion should be banned in all cases? Would you like to take a guess? The answer is 19%. Only 19% of the American people say, yeah, let's ban abortion. And that means ban in all cases. Only 19%. When it comes to how many think it should be legal in all cases with no restrictions, that's 29%. It's a low number, but still way more than 19. And when it comes to the position of legal with regulation, so allowed in many cases, but, you know, there's rules for late term, for example. Okay, late term, you can only have the abortion if it's the life of the mother is in danger, there's a defect in the fetus, and the fetus won't make it anyway, or if it's rape or incest. That position, 50% of the American people, a plurality of the American people say, yeah, you have it legal and have it legal with regulations, which is what it is in the United States. But only 19% of people agree with the right-wing organizers of this protest who say, yeah, let's defund Planned Parenthood and we're so against abortion. So here's why your rally's not attracting people, not just because of the problem on the website and the misinterpretation. Your rally's not attracting that many people because your position sucks. Because it's a hard-line position, it's an irrational position, and people no longer feel that way. Maybe if you did this march in 1946, people would have been, oh, yes, we must do this. Today, people look at you like, huh? What are you talking about? That's what you're going to march for? So good luck with your shitty march. It won't get very far. Okay, now an interesting Supreme Court case. There's a really interesting story in Vice News about a Supreme Court case that's currently being heard. They explain the Supreme Court recently heard arguments about whether the name of a small rock group is too offensive to be registered as a trademark. The band is called The Slants, but the members are all Asian and say they're taking back the slur and exercising free speech. The government thinks the band being Asian actually makes the name more offensive. The Supreme Court's decision could reverberate beyond the band's case, potentially impacting the Washington Redskins' ability to own the rights to their name. So the band is saying, hey, it's free speech, and we're trying to reclaim this and make it not offensive. And they actually have a really strong case because they point to the names of other bands and other names that have been trademarked for businesses and other things. Like the Gooks is one. Like there's a bunch of things that are considered offensive, you know, slurs against different groups of people that have already been trademarked. So they say, look, how can you make the argument that we can't trademark this maybe, maybe not offensive thing, which we're trying to reclaim, when there's already been offensive things that people have trademarked? That doesn't make any sense. There's no consistency there. So that's their argument. Again, the argument of the opposition's argument is, well, you shouldn't, so you don't have a right to trademark the name. Like, you can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. You could have that name, it's fine. But when you try to trademark it, what you're asking for is basically official government recognition that this is what your name is. And it's not a violation of free speech for the government to say you can't trademark it. It would be a violation of free speech if the government said, you can't name your band that, period, and we're going to throw you in jail because you named your band that. That's a clear violation of free speech. But they're saying it's not a violation of free speech for the government to say, we're not going to trademark it. You don't have a right to the trademark of it. So it's an interesting case. I'm curious to see how they're going to come out. I'm a free speech absolutist, so I always lean towards, I don't give a fuck about your feelings. I don't give a fuck if you're offended. They should be able to do whatever they want to do. And the reasoning behind what they're doing is actually kind of noble because they're saying, hey, look, we're Asian and we're trying to reclaim that. Honestly, like the N-word when it ends in an A, not E-R, but when it ends in an A, you have like young black men kind of took that back and were like, no, we're not going to, it's not a slur anymore. Now it's an endearing thing that we'll say to each other. So fuck off. So I lean in that direction. I understand why one would want to have it trademarked and want to almost like just eliminate the idea of these offensive things that rub people the wrong way, and you just don't need to trademark it. Like, okay, whatever, you can call yourself that, but don't ask for official recognition because we don't want to recognize what we view as loathsome, basically. But I do think at the end of the day, I got to lean on the side more of free speech absolutism and say, if they want to call themselves that, let them call themselves that. And who's the government to say you can't trademark that? When they want to trademark it, number one, and number two, their reasoning is even sound. But even if their reasoning wasn't sound, I don't know if I would say, no, I'm not going to let you trademark that. So, I don't know. I'm on the side of live and let live. If you're offended, get over it. That's not the worst thing in the world to be offended. I'm offended by things that are considered totally mainstream and totally normal. So should I be able to, hey, I don't want you to play that fucking gross tampon commercial or constipation commercial in the middle of the day when I'm trying to eat and I'm watching TV. I'm offended by that. Stop. Don't cover fucking gross shit when I'm over here trying to eat. You know, don't shove religion down my throat. Like, they open the government meetings with a prayer, which I think is a violation of secularism, by the way. But, you know, should I be able to say on the grounds that it offends me? Get rid of that. No, I shouldn't be able to say it on those grounds. I'm offended, so shut up. No. That's it. No, get over it. Okay, I'm not happy all the time when I see everything happening. Other people aren't going to be happy all the time. It's their fucking band. Let them name it whatever they want to name it. And I would just say whatever. Here, trademarked. That's it. And the final story of the day. So I'm not kidding. We're actually going to finish early today. All right. Spencer Woodman of The Intercept has an eye-opening report for us about the Republican onslaught against the First Amendment. So he explains here, in states home to dozens of Saturday's demonstrations, this is a few weeks ago, Republican lawmakers are moving to criminalize and increase penalties on peaceful protesting. Last week, I reported that such efforts were afoot in five states, Minnesota, Washington State, Michigan, and Iowa. Republican lawmakers have proposed an array of anti-protesting laws that center on stiffening penalties for demonstrators who block traffic in North Dakota. Conservatives are even pushing a bill that would allow motorists to run over and kill protesters so long as the collision was accidental. Similarly, Republicans in Indiana last week prompted uproar over a proposed law that would instruct police to use any means necessary to clear protesters off a roadway. Two bills are pending in Virginia and Colorado. This brings the number of states that have in recent weeks floated such proposals to at least eight. In Colorado, Republican State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg has introduced a bill that would greatly increase penalties for environmental protesters. Under the proposed law, obstructing or tampering with oil and gas equipment would be reclassified from a misdemeanor to a Class 6 felony, a category of crime that reportedly can be punished by up to 18 months behind bars, and a fine of up to $100,000. So what we see here is an all-out assault on the First Amendment and free speech rights and free protest rights, and it's being waged by the right against people who disagree with their shitty agenda. So, you know, we saw this a lot at the Dakota Access Pipeline. Oh, you have protesters on a road. Fuck them. Just run over them or you know, be aggressive in your attempt to get through them. And, hey, now if something happens and one of them, you happen to accidentally run over one, what are we going to do? I mean, what are we going to do? I said you could remove people from the roadway by any means necessary, so whatever, bro. It is what it is. No. This is an area where I sense a lot of hypocrisy on the right, because you'll have people scream about free speech rights on college campuses. And by the way, I agree about that. Like, we should have free speech rights on college campuses. I would let conservative speakers talk, of course. But they'll scream about that. But then when you have an instance like this where there's another real threat against the First Amendment and free protest rights, they got nothing to say. Because they agree with the oil companies, they agree with building the pipelines, they agree with the right-wing politicians who are trying to do various things. There was, Governor McRory, former Governor McRory, was being shouted down, and you had somebody, a Republican in the state legislature, say, how about we pass a law to criminalize that kind of activity, because he maybe felt threatened. So now you're not allowed to talk at or yell at peacefully. But yeah, have your voice heard at a politician who you disagree with. You can't raise your voice to a politician without that being a violation of the law now. And these are the same people who are going to claim they care about free speech rights on college campuses. My ass, you do. You don't care about it at all. if it's a political issue that you agree with, well, then you'll overlook the authoritarian crackdowns on rights and civil liberties. That's what's happening now. And again, we've seen this in other respects, too. There's been a massive onslaught against pro-Palestinian activism on college campuses. They've shut down pro-Palestinian groups and said, this is a hate group. Wait. I thought everybody on the right said, oh, no, we care about free speech on college campuses. Well, you're cracking down on free speech on college campuses because they're smearing pro-Palestinian groups and claiming you're all anti-Semitic by definition. So that is a clear crackdown on free speech rights. But I hear fucking crickets from the right wing. So let's be fucking consistent. This is one area where I've done my best to say, whether I agree or disagree with the political issue, we have to support the right of people to express those feelings and those opinions without being censored or banned. Well, now you have legal crackdowns on people who are just protesting and doing the thing that is the most American in the country. So this is something that we have to reverse. We have to reverse it now. We have to fight back. And I'd like to hear some people on the right speak up about this too. Okay. Look at that. Earliest we've been in a while. 9 minutes early. What are you going to do? All right, guys. Time for me to go celebrate my birthday by doing some more work. All right, love you all. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know the deal. Everybody have a great rest of the day. Mwah. I'm out.